Blog Talk Radio.
There's something wrong with the world today. I don't know what it is. Something's wrong with our eyes. We're seeing things in a different way. God knows it ain't his. It sure ain't no surprise. We're living on the edge. The light bulb.
Hello and welcome again to Conversations with Spirit here on Mike Spirit FM. It's a little after 8 o'clock in the evening here in Australia, in Canberra, in Australian Eastern Standard Time. Many apologies I must sort of give to everybody who's listening to this show, who's tuning in, who tuned in last week. We got about 10 minutes of the show. Blog Talk did its classic. It actually dumped us out and said the broadcast was over after 10 minutes. And sadly, we didn't even get to talk to our fantastic guest. Luckily, my good friend Standing Bear is back with us this week, and we will be able to have a big discussion about Native American tradition. Now, before I actually bring Standing Bear on, I just want to just do a few shout-outs to people who are actually in the chat room. I just want to say hi to Dagmar, hi to Gil, hi to Patty, hi to Simone, and of course, how can I forget, a big hi to my beautiful wife, Chris, who is in the chat room as well. Now, the type of show that this is a little bit different to our other Conversations with Spirit that actually goes out. It's actually 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time on a Tuesday morning, which is 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock at night GMT. There we actually encourage people to call in for live readings. Me and my studio guests do live readings on this particular show. We still encourage people to phone in or to Skype in, but I'm actually more interested in people joining in the actual discussions of the show. I will do live readings if there is a need or a must, but really I'm interested in people joining in our discussions and interacting and talking about their experiences and sharing with us their viewpoints. This is the type of show that Conversations with Spirit 2 is. Now, the guest call-in, if you are in the U.S., is area code 760-283-4611. May I recommend anybody else who's wishing to actually come in into the show to actually use the blue Skype button that they will see on the player and actually Skype in. That way, it's a lot easier. It's a lot cheaper for yourselves, and the connection will be that much better. Now, without further ado, and I'm sort of got a half smile on my face because he's actually making it into the show this week. Hello, Standing Bear. You finally made it, mate. It's taken 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's taken a little bit, eh?
I know.
Joys of technology.
I know. There's still a little bit of let's say gremlins on the line. There's a little bit of feedback and a little bit of things, but I'm sure everybody will be able to actually hear you. Do you want to just quickly let everybody know who Standing Bear is, where you're from, where you come from, a bit of your background so everybody knows who you are?
Yeah, not a problem. Well, as you know, my name's Standing Bear, but most people just call me Bear. I'm actually was taken from my mother at birth and sold into adoption and shipped out here to Australia with about 1,500 other half and full-blood native kids between 1963 and 1976. There were thousands of Scoop-era babies and babies from the U.S. and Canada shipped all over the world for adoption. So I don't know exactly where I was born or even the exact date of my birth. I've tried for nearly 30 years to find my family and all that, but because I don't have a birth certificate or any of that, it's very difficult. I've gained some little bits of stuff through what I call non-identifying information. I know I'm the son of a Vietnam veteran, and my father is, you know, from down the southwest, which is Apache, and my mother's up in Innu country, up in Canada. And also have Scott Irish thrown in as well. Growing up over here as an adoptee wasn't pleasant, but, you know, it's just the way of things. But I spent a lot of time exploring the darker side of life as a dysfunctional teenager. But then I hit a point where I had to make a choice, and that choice was whether to spend the rest of my life in jail or die, or change what I was doing. and that was after my third major motorcycle accident. And that led me into trying to find my family. And that led me into learning my culture and the cultures of many different indigenous peoples around the place, around what I came in contact with through the work I was doing over here, but also to find a lot of my own answers. You know, back home in the States or in Canada, I'm what's classified as a non-status, which means I'm not recognized, I don't have a status card, I can't say exactly which res or community I'm from, but it still doesn't discount who I am as a person. And in a lot of different circles, unfortunately, that still does. And there's a lot of us that were taken and relocated and fostered out and adopted out. I got Native friends over here that grew up in Germany and England and Holland and all that because their fathers fought in Europe in World War II and remained over there. They didn't want to go back to the persecution that was and the poverty that was happening on the reservations. You know, we're spread out all over the world. But as I said, I spent a lot of time resolving my own issues, which led me to understand a lot about what it is to be a person and a human being and how to have a relationship with family and community, with, you know, the Earth Mother, with Creator, and having that relationship with yourself. Because as a child growing up, because I didn't connect with my adopted parents and everything I was a threat to their illusion that they were trying to build, which was that I was their child, which wasn't their fault. Is what they were taught at that time. My connection to Creator is like to my father. My connection to the Earth Mother, I see them as like my mother. And I see the ancestors and the culture as my family. And that's a little bit different to a lot of people because I did this as a child. But as I've traveled around and I've met a lot of what are called, you know, lost birds or lost children, children that were taken, it's a common thread amongst those that were separated from their family as a child, whether it be through removal or through neglect or abuse. We tend to turn as a child to the nature that is around us, the environment that is around us, to fulfill that void that our parents didn't. That makes us separate from the society that we're in, but it also gives us an insight that can help balance out the society today. What I do now is whatever I'm asked to do in a good way, and wherever I'm able to do and make a difference with the knowledge that I have. For the last several years, I've been heavily involved with the Federal Forced Adoption Apology here in Australia, with the Federal Senate Inquiry into Forced Adoption. And my aim is to try to change the Child Protection Act, the way it's worded and the way it plays out, and the view of removing children and the way that it is done, and to actually have adoption banned, because adoption is definitely not the answer. But that's, you know, going off subject a little bit. And when I was back in Canada, before I got sick over there, I was working towards, you know, being able to work in community to help create the programs to start to rebuild our families and communities back over there by supporting our elders and following their guidance in the way that each community needs to be rebuilt to deal with the family abuse and violence and all that, and the persecution, unemployment, poverty, and everything else that goes hand in hand with being Indigenous in any country in this world. Other than that, I'm just a, you know, 43-year-old guy that's trying to do my best to walk in a good way upon this earth.
You are one real big inspiration for us all, Bear. I've known you for a couple of years, but I didn't know your full story, and I must admit I'm sitting here and I'm gobsmacked, and it really puts, for anybody who's actually listening to this show, that it really puts everything into perspective, how we all think that we've got problems and we've all got issues and we've got family around us, and then there's you, Bear, and you're adopted and you don't know who your real family are. I mean, you are an absolute credit to yourself and also to your peoples as well, the way that you've stuck it out.
Oh, thank you. As I said, there's Australia adoption actually affects 15% of the Australian population. In the US now, there's a Lakota Youth Project where they're actually trying to stop the forced removal of children from the reserves up there. You know, it's still happening today. And this is the whole point of, you know, what I'm hoping to talk about tonight is to burst that bubble that spirituality is going to save you.
Yeah.
Spirituality is purely there for you to believe and learn in yourself and who you are and your place in community, and to value the sacredness of your family.
Yeah.
Any indigenous nation in the world, back in the day, all of the ceremonies were around, you know, reconfirming the bonds between the people, between family members, between that nation, and their relationship with the land they lived upon, and the spirits of that place, and the environment of that place, to live in harmony so that they lived well. To form those bonds, the ceremonies taught protocols of how to resolve issues. You know, how to heal, you know, after bad things have happened, how to reintegrate veterans back in the community, how to deal with death, how to resolve, you know, if a child's parents are killed through the illness or war or an accident, how to raise that child, and to resolve that separation from mother and father. You know, for all the listeners out there, even though I know a lot of people have issues with their parents, but you've got to also understand that they're people.
Yeah.
And we all make mistakes. But the ability to hold your own mother in your arms, you know, there are thousands of children out there, literally thousands, if not millions of children in the world today that don't have that, have never had that. My only memory of my mother is her screaming, "Please don't take my baby," the moment I was born.
Yes.
I remember the umbilical cord being wrapped around my leg. I was literally gripped for my mother. And I know of hundreds of other adoptees in the discussions that I've had, being involved with the Senate inquiry and all this sort of stuff, who have similar memories. Now, I believe Creator had a means for this. There was a reason for this. But it's not like, oh, crap, you know, he's got to be the Messiah or anything like that. No, it's for me and all of us to remind people the value of our own community. You know, the society we're creating today doesn't value family.
That's correct. Just going back to, obviously, you found out obviously quite a few things about yourself and obviously your beliefs, etc. So where did you actually do your training, or where did you do your actual rituals, and where did you understand about your traditions, Bear? How did that come about?
Well, the first thing is, I don't believe you learned ceremony. I believe you learn how to remember it. We're born with that knowledge. I firmly believe that we inherit all the memory from all our bloodline ancestry back to the beginning of our family. And it's triggered by different places and different events we go to. You know, I first started to learn how to interpret what I was feeling through the martial arts I was learning to rehabilitate after the accident. And then it led off with, you know, Maori friends that I had and Aboriginal friends that I had from over here and many different Indigenous people were participating in some of their ceremonies and that. And then I finally got enough money together. So I got on a plane and landed in LA, in the States, with, you know, no plan. I just went there. And circumstance got me out of you know, I had to leave L.A. pretty quickly. As I was walking down to Santa Monica, a guy tried to convince me that my wallet was his, and I was forced to convince him otherwise. So I thought it was sort of smart, you know, smart to get out of the hostel down there. So I just looked at a map, closed my eyes, and just put my finger on it, and bought a bus ticket to what the town that was underneath my finger, which was really bizarre because the town was all truth or consequences in New Mexico. Got on a Greyhound bus. 3 days later, I'm back. I'm in the New Mexican desert. You know, the bus drives off. I'm in this little broken down shed, and there was nothing. And just sitting on the suitcase, going, "Well, now what?" And about 45 minutes later, this old beat up Dodge comes up, and it's all different panels, different color, and all this sort of stuff. And this lady gets out and says, "Oh, we're on the town taxi. You got to come here to meet the Greyhound." And I end up getting snowed into that place for nearly 7 weeks. But it got me grounded in how the U.S. works. And the second day I was actually down there in TSC, I was coming back from a grocery store, and this lady, a native lady in a wheelchair, you know, screaming, crying, you know, wheeling herself towards me, tears streaming down her face, talking Spanish. She didn't speak English, and she grabbed hold of me and just held on to me, wouldn't let go. And I didn't know what, I didn't speak Spanish, so I didn't know what she was saying. And finally a neighbor came out and was translating, and she actually thought I was her son coming home, because her son was taken from her when he was 3 or 4 years old. And, you know, it's those sorts of things that teach you your spirituality, that teach you your ceremony.
Definitely.
You know, I traded for a flute. There was a guy that didn't have any money, so he had a cedar flute. So I traded him some dead Washington for it, a bit of money for it. And I sat on the edge of the Rio Grande and played that, just taught myself to play that flute. And then I lift my head up, and there's 30-odd coyotes sitting on the other bank just looking at me.
Wow.
That's how you learn spirituality.
That's right.
I don't know a lot of the traditional ceremonies, because I've only participated in a few.
Another question for you. Now, I had a very good friend of mine, a guy called Grant Downs. He was known as Skyhorse, and he was a Lakota Indian who went on a vision quest from the U.S., and he actually moved to an area of North Yorkshire. And I had endless discussions about past lives and reincarnation, and his people's belief was you only had one life, and as far as his peoples were concerned, there wasn't anything known as reincarnation. Just out of interest, what are your views on reincarnation as an indigenous person?
Well, see, that's another myth with First Nations, with American and Canadian First Nations, or anywhere on Turtle Island, which is South America, all the way up to Alaska. Each nation has a lot of different beliefs. You know, one of my peoples, you know, this life is the one that we need to live.
Yeah.
But we do come back. And it's not so much from the, you know, the New Age perspective of we got karma and all this other stuff we got to resolve. It's all about the evolution of the human spirit. You know, I believe we're a cell in the organism of the universe. Each individual life, including the stars and planets, everything is a cell in the body of the universe. And we're all here purely and simply for the universe to learn about itself. I believe, you know, and you can see that in a lot of the creation stories from different nations, that the Creator gifted the mechanism for creating life. And then the Creator stepped back. And then, as life started to grow in different places and in different ways, then certain spirits were sent to teach those different places how to live well. You know, how to honor creation. You know, you've got the White Buffalo Pack Woman, you've got, you know, Spider Woman, Lightning Boy, Jamona, and the Anishinaabe, you've got all different nations. And, you know, you've got, you know, JC was sent to the people he was sent to. You've got, you know, to Buddha, and you got all these different people or deities, whatever you want to call them. I prefer to call them people because they were people. They were sent with a knowledge to teach their community how to live in the right way. The mythology and the stories of the community teaches us to understand ourselves, our emotions, and who we are, and our place in our community and in creation. You know, with the past life thing, so many people today are looking for a way to escape the reality of who they are in their life.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, we're in a now situation as a spirit. In the now, really, the past is not important. The past is what has created the person that's in the now. So why do we really need to go back over what we've been before?
It's because people don't want to deal with what they've created. You know, I believe with all my heart that the only thing that stops us journeying to our ancestors in a good way when our body passes is our belief that we're ready.
Yeah.
You know, I myself, and I've known a few people that have had a very close call. And when I got sick in Canada when I was last there, you know, I'm lying in a hospital bed. And I'm watching the heart monitor slowly, you know, slow down. And when it got down to 17 beats a minute, I thought, well, I couldn't move. I was stone cold. And I started thinking, well, you know, this is kind of it. And I thought, because the other times I've come close were through motorcycle accidents, it was a millisecond impact. This time I was conscious. And everything that I thought I would be concerned about, you know, the actions, you know, my gang history as an adolescent and all that sort of stuff, I thought that would be what would, you know, come up. It never even entered my mindset. There was only two things that would have stopped me journeying in a good way. And, you know, the first one was, you know, that feeling of being safe. Whenever, you know, most people, when they're a little kid and you're freaked out and you get held by your mom or your dad and you have that feeling of absolute safety, I'd never experienced that. And the other one was just that perfect emotional moment, a moment where your head doesn't get in the way, your fear doesn't get in the way, just that perfect emotional moment. They were the only two things that were regrets in a life that I've lived a lot from my years, and I've been all over the place doing different things. And that showed me and grounded me in the simple fact of the value of family. Because we forget about those simple little moments, the in-between moments between experiences in our life. Between going to work and arguments with people and dealing with traffic and paying bills and all the stresses, we actually forget those moments. You know, the parents are forced to put their children in full-time childcare just to financially survive with their work. And those children are growing up in the arms of other people and learning other people's ways because they're going to attach to the people at the childcare centers because they're there longer than they are with their parents in their waking hours.
That's correct.
It's those sorts of things that matter. You know, in this world today, everybody is trying to be the medicine person. Everybody wants to get to the top of that mountain to go, look, Creator, at what I have done. Creator, in my beliefs, and this is my personal beliefs, I'm not representing any nation here, but in my beliefs, Creator doesn't care what we've done. Creator cares in who we are.
Yeah, that's very good. That's a very good way of putting it, and I'm certain that a lot of people listening will appreciate what you've said there.
Well, thank you. But as I said, I've known a lot of people that, you know, these are really, you know, in the eyes of different communities, are it. You know, these people have a lot of traditional knowledge and all this sort of stuff. But they're still people.
Yeah.
You know, everybody starts searching for this Messiah the time of the Messiah was past. You know, that was given as a way of teaching for the human people. And the human race turned the Messiah into a religion. And those religions have cost billions of lives.
Yeah. And it's just a means of control as well. Sorry, I'm cutting in. It's a always been a means of control and always been a means of separating the population and imposing control by one set of society and another set of society.
Yeah. And it all comes from fear.
Yeah, it's all fear-based. That's
fear,
right.
Fear, our potential as people. In a traditional society, it's based around a clan structure or a lodge structure or a kiva structure down in the Southwest where, you know, what you're born into it. It's whatever suits your particular personality and skill set. And it's never for what you do for yourself. It's always for your role in your community.
Very true.
You know, now, I'm a bear clan.
Can I just break in there, Bear, because there's somebody who very much, I believe, would like to talk to you. He's just asked a question in the chat room about 10 minutes ago. I'm assuming it's a he. And are you okay to just take a call? I doubt it'll be a reading as such, Bear. I think it's more just in the discussion.
Just so everybody knows, I will not read on this because... It's too private for me, and it's not the way of it.
Yeah.
This is purely a discussion.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. If there are any calls at all that want a reading, I'll do the readings. But there is a guy on his Skype address is linked Stargate, and I'm just interested to just hear what he wants to actually ask you. Just bear with me a second. Hello, you're actually on Conversation with Spirit. What's your name,
please? My name is John. I have a question. I have this book right here. It says the Bible, and it says right here that I should kill homosexuals.
Okay, we won't deal with that. Sorry about that. I'm sorry about that, Bear. We have ourselves a...
No, fine. Can I just say something?
Yeah.
On air, just the thing is, you know, okay, you know, this person, you know, he's got a book that says, I got to kill homosexuals. But one of the Ten Commandments is, thou shalt not kill. Now, with the Bible, all the ancient texts that were written, and you can check at universities for this, there's actually a mathematical equation that works out how the language is written. They've actually put a mathematical equation to it. A lot of the different translations of the Bible and several other older religious books that are being translated and translated and translated, when you put that equation to it, words like that say, you know, they're taken out. They don't exist. And online you can actually find a copy of the Bible that is being purely translated from to this mathematical equation, because language is basically a mathematical base, and that's how you can find out what teaching is and what is right from that particular path and what teaching isn't. Religion for me, its time has passed, but that's just my personal view. I grew up in a very old school religious household, and there was a lot of harm done through it. And for me, it's got nothing to do with the belief system, but the religion around it. Its waters are poisoned because of the harm it has done. And that statement there, written in a book, shows you exactly what that kind of harm is.
Exactly.
Everybody is allowed to be who they are. They cannot force that view upon anybody else. One of, I believe, Creator's laws is no one has a right to tell another how to pray and how to do ceremony. Now, that was told to me by grandmas back home, back in the day, when I was over there. And I believe that so much in my heart. We do not have the right to enforce our views upon another, nor do they have the right to enforce their views upon us. Because we're going to face Creator, whether we like it or not. I don't care what crap people write in a book. We're going to face our Creator. and we're going to be accountable for everything we've think, said, and done.
Right.
Nailing a perfectly good guy up to a piece of wood, going out and doing other acts in the name of your religion is not going to save you from that. And if people truly get into the theology of those ancient texts, you would find that to be true.
I mean, you get to a certain point with your own spirituality, you get to a certain point with your growth, that there's only one person that you have to face, there's only one truth that you've actually got to face, and it's your actual true self, it's yourself. You can lie to others, you can hide behind a book, you can hide behind other fear-based rules, but when it comes down to it, you get yourself in that Lupendo state once you've left your body, you've got to be completely truthful to yourself. And that is the one thing that people cannot avoid, and that is the self.
Yep, and that's why when religion is being converted and twisted to save, you know, to create the illusion to save you from that. But, you know, I've been around people when they've passed, and anybody that truly can, and I don't believe the majority of people that say they can, they misinterpret a hell of a lot.
Yeah.
But those that are truly born with the ability and the gift or curse, depending on how you want to see it, because it's not exactly fun, to talk to those that have passed, know that you would face the truth of who you are.
Correct. Now, there's people asking on the chat room, Bear, have you got a website, and exactly how do you do your work? Because obviously you go to Lambeth Bennett venues and expos and various other places in Sydney and the world. How do you work?
Well, obviously, I've kind of backed off from a lot of that. The last two trips back home, when I went home to Canada to try to find my mom, and I had my partner over there, and all that. I kind of went a little bit more where I can't be restricted with the amount of time that I sit with people. Because what I primarily do is help show people what they're doing inside themselves to do themselves and their path harm, what created that, and how to create a path out of that. And that takes longer than I can do at a lot of those places. The website that I have, I haven't touched in several years because I'm still trying to work out how, you know, to relate what I'm going to do over here, because I wasn't planning on coming back. I wanted to live, and I was setting up to live in community back home and to work over there. But for here, the easiest way to get hold of me is through Facebook, or my email address is just standingbear@bigpond.com, all lowercase, all one word. And I can go and talk. I'm in the Blue Mountains area west of Sydney, so, and I can talk on Skype and that. But as I said, in those festivals, and I don't have the time, and I don't believe it's the environment to really open people up to what's going on for them.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's not the right environment at all.
You know, like I've spent, you know, hours with people, sometimes days, depending on the situation and what's going on and what I'm able to do. And I also, I don't like to charge for what I do. People choose what they want to offer. You know, and that makes it hard with those sorts of fairs events, because you got to pay for the table and the space and all that sort of crap. So I'm slowly shifting more towards that, but I'm also, as I said, spending a lot of time. I'm working on writing a thesis now to try to get into the UN to get them to be aware of what they're doing to society and humanity. And it's basically around the reconstruction of the human being after trauma. And it's going to deal with mothers and children and veterans and all this sort of stuff, and what's been done to us indigenous people. All that's involved. Because I believe that the hope for humanity is the indigenous protocols of each nation. In Australia, it's the Australian Aboriginal people who need to be the spiritual heart of this country. In Turtle Island, it's the nations over there. It's Canadian and American First Nations. you know, all over the world, in England and all that. You got to go back to the traditional, you know, the Druidic areas. You've got all the Celtic stuff is sort of an import. But then you've got the Gallivdian, you know, with the Scots and all that, and
yeah.
Wiccan, the Wiccan stuff, not the way it's twisted out of context now. You know, it's getting back to nature. It's getting back to living in the earth in a good way. We can still have our technology, but we've got to live in balance. And that's what I believe our society needs beyond all else. And it's the indigenous people of each nation that need to be supported first to rebuild their civilizations, because the harm that is being done is astronomical. You know, in America alone, on the U.S. government records, in the last century of the Indian Wars, 150 million First Nation people were killed. You know, in Australia, it's getting up there. You know, it's that thing of we need to support the indigenous communities to rebuild their communities. And then the gift that the society gets from that is they can relearn how to live as a family and community.
Yeah.
You know, and how to understand that we are not the reason for all this to exist. We are simply part of the great hoop of life. We are no more sacred or less sacred than an ant or a lizard or a tree or a rock or a raindrop.
Yeah. I've got a fantastic little quote on the wall in front of me, and I'm sure you'll be familiar with it, and I'm sure a lot of people will be familiar with it. It's a Cree Indian prophecy, and it goes like this: only after the last tree has been cut down, only after the last river has been poisoned, only after the last fish has been caught, only then will you find that money can't be eaten. I think that just about sums up what the indigenous peoples in America and around the world have actually what it's all been about. It's all been about materialism, as far as I'm concerned, and it has sickened me ever since I was a young child.
Yeah, but see, it's not a matter of seeing money as evil either. See, in the old days, we did our ceremonies and our prayers to hunt for food, shelter, and clothing. You know, the hunt and gather for our food, shelter, and clothing. Nowadays, we can still do those same ceremonies, but we hunt for the means, you know, and when we hunted for animals and that in the old days, we only took what we needed.
Yeah.
And we gave back what we did not use. And today, we can still use those same ceremonies to hunt for money, to trade for food, shelter, and clothing.
Yeah.
But the same balance applies. You know, you got people like Murdoch and all that that have billions and billions of dollars. They couldn't spend it even if they wanted to.
No, their actions are fear-based, though. It's their...
But you look at the price tag. But you look at the price tag.
That's right.
You know, his family, what family has he got? How many true friends does he have?
Exactly.
Money is... The politicians are not power. The puppet masters behind the politicians have no power. I had this discussion a couple of weeks back with a guy who was questioning power in a not good way. And, was, you know, you could have some, you know, like Obama or some of the most powerful business moguls on the planet. And I said, well, do you see them as having true power? And he said, yeah.
I don't.
An assassin's bullet can take that power away in a blink of an eye. A bacteria, something you could fit 1,000 of in the head of a pin, could take that power away in a blink of an eye.
That's right.
That's not power. Power is a thunderstorm, a mountain, a river, a valley, the sky, the stars.
The snow on the ground.
Yeah. The breath of a child, that first breath, when the spirit enters the child's body the moment after it's born, that is power.
Correct. I'm glad you said that, because I share your view. I know we're digressing, but I've always said to people that when the child takes its first breath, the soul enters the body and it goes into the ventricle in the heart. Now, and you're one of the first people I've ever heard to actually say that.
Well, in my beliefs, you know, the spirit, like, and you go into a lot of the older ceremonies too, and a lot of the traditions with indigenous communities, men are not allowed in the room or in the lodge or the home or the teepee, whatever, the house, the home, when the child is being born. There are no men allowed in there because men hunt, men take life. They have to kill in war, they have to fight to defend their people. And that's because two spirits cannot occupy one person. That's why the child's spirit is not, it's connected to the mother, but it's not in the fetus that's growing inside the mother's womb.
That's correct.
And then the grandmothers are around and the midwives, and when the child is born and takes its first breath, that spirit is sung in. And only then can the father come in. So if I ever turn around and get married and have children, I've got the best excuse to not be in the birthing room. And as my female friends say, you have got about as much.
That's a good one. Now, on that one, let's just have a music break just for 4 minutes,
yep,
just so we can go into the second part of the show. And let's just hone into traditions a little bit more. So I just want to play,
yep,
a Blackfoot song, and then we'll be back in about 4 minutes.
Ask you for your autograph.
Okay, you're listening to... sorry about that, everybody. You're listening to Conversations with Spirit 2 here on Mike Spirit FM, the very apt song, Matt Indeed, Living in the Limelight, Blackfoot. My special guest is Standing Bear from Sydney. He's a good friend of mine. I've known him for a couple of years. We are talking about Native American and Indigenous peoples and traditions, and in particular, trying to get the family values back into the modern world and try and get things right back on track, because mankind seems to have lost its way slightly, hasn't it, Standing Bear?
No, it definitely has in my view, eh? But, back on what we were saying with the traditional things. But just before we sort of start getting into more traditional stuff, there's a couple of frameworks I need to put down.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine.
A lot of people out there have this understanding that there, especially with Native American or First Nation, that there is one tradition. That's one of the first little bubbles I have to burst, is there isn't. There is, ceremonies that are done within each community that vary from nation to nation. And you can even have very similar ceremonies that are done for completely different reasons between different nations. The easiest example is a Nipi, like Sweat Lodge, that everybody hears about all over the world.
Yeah.
Sweat Lodge for the Plains, for the Lakota and the Sioux Nation, has a completely different meaning to the way it is done with, say, the Anishinaabe up in Canada. The ceremonies are approached in a completely different way and are done for a different purpose.
Yeah.
A little bit of insight into First Nation ceremonies, like with any Indigenous ceremony, you're going to meet your creator. And because of the conditions in that ceremony, the tests in that ceremony, you approach those ceremonies with a 50-50 chance whether you're going to journey to the spirit world or not.
Yeah.
No, ceremony is not a game.
No,
too many people, way too lightly.
Yeah, I passed out in the... I did an EP with Ground Downs with Skyhorse, and I actually passed out, which was intended. And I did have a shamanic experience. I was one of the lucky ones, and I know what an EP is like, and I know the dangers of them as well, which we had outlined for about 2 days prior to doing it, what was likely to happen.
Yeah, well, see, I don't do sweat. That's not of my way. And I've never poured water for another human being. I've sweated plenty of times with other Native friends and family and all that. But, too many people treat that they want to have a ceremonial experience. But with Indigenous stuff, you've also got to understand that experience could also be your last. There are different reasons for doing ceremony. From the teachings that I've been taught and what I've learned, like Vision Quest is another.
Yeah.
You don't just decide to go out and seek a vision.
No.
You're taught and prepared for it. And you never seek a vision for yourself. In this modern day world, everybody wants to do this stuff for themselves. That's not what it's about. In the old way, if you're seeking a vision from Creator or from your ancestors, it's your part that you play for your people. It's got nothing to do with you. It's not about personal power. It's about your path and the sacrifices you're going to make for your community, for your nation. And you prepare for that. In some traditions it's 4 years, in some traditions it's 7. Women don't do vision quest in that way because their path is set. They have the gift, they've been given the gift from Creator to gift life. In my beliefs, women are closer to the Creator than men will ever be because Creator touches them with the ability to create life. If you look at the different ceremonies out there, for men in Indigenous societies, men's bundles are usually larger because we've got to learn the medicines that women carry within their body. I've seen elders, male elders, when they unfold in ceremony back home, and they're huge. And I've seen some of the Dene grandmothers, and they're heavy. Because all their medicines, their bundle they carry inside their body, because it's all about that connection to Creator. In one tradition with the plug and left with the pipe, you know, that's another thing where different nations view it in completely different ways. And nobody owns each way by that nation. If you're gifted a pipe in a Lakota tradition, you follow the Lakota tradition from it. If you're gifted it in a Anishinaabe, then it's Anishinaabe. If you're gifted in a Navajo, it's Navajo. You honor the elders that gifted you that. You do not create your own. You are gifted it. And it is a role that you fulfill for that, for your people, for that people that have taken you in or that are your community. But each tradition serves a purpose. It's a mark of your place in your community and what you do to help support and grow and prosper that community, not yourself. In this day and age, too many things are taken out of context in this quest for personal power. And that's one of the things that people need to realize and change. When you do traditional ceremonies, you're facing your ancestors, and then you face your Creator. And the Creator doesn't hear the words that your mouth speaks. The Creator hears the words that your heart speaks. And that dictates your path. You know, I've sat around fires, I've sat in lodges with people, and I've heard some really beautiful words spoken. And then I've also seen that the actions of those people that have followed up before and after. And then those people will come to me or others and go, why does my world fall apart? Well, you gave your word, and you haven't lived up to it. And it's not that you're being punished, it's that you're being taught to respect the power that your words have. We are given two eyes. We're given two hands, two legs, two ears, one heart, and one mouth.
Yeah.
Our words have power.
And if you say something, it should be actually from the heart, not from the ego.
Well, it is from the heart, whether your heart listens to ego or not. See, for me, ego is a canoe that carries you to the island itself.
Yeah.
Ego is not a bad thing. It just means if you're coming from your ego, you just have no clue who you are.
Correct.
And I pray for people like that.
Yeah.
And then you get those people that once they carry their, you know, they use that canoe to get to the island itself, they start to learn who they are, and then they've got a choice. Do they leave that behind? Or do they carry it with them?
Yeah, so few people, actually do truly what their heart wishes them to do, because fear gets in the way.
Fear, self-doubt, and all this sort of stuff. See, I see ego as a medicine gift given by the Creator. It's there to protect us until we know who we are.
Yeah.
And for the most of us now, because we don't have the initiations and the ceremonies, and we're not raised in a culture anymore, we have no idea who we are. Religion is not a culture. There, you know, a lot of people say that, you know, Islam or Christianity and Buddhism and all that is a culture. It's not, by simple definition. The difference between a religion and culture, you know, a religion is purely on, you know, for preparation to journey to the other side. Culture contains within it how to gather food, where to find medicine plants, where to find water, where to find hunting grounds, how to solve problems within a community, how to feed your community, how to deal with waste products in your community, where to go to the bathroom, all this sort of stuff. It contains all the components that a society needs to live. Food, shelter, clothing, safety. That's a culture. Religion is purely on the preparation for dying and go to the spirit world. In the Bible, there is stories about, you know, gathering fish and all that, but it doesn't teach you how to build a boat. It doesn't teach you how to create fishing lines and fishing traps and the cycle of the seasons of when certain fish are going to be where. It doesn't teach you within that how to grow corn or, you know, different types of vegetables that they grew in those areas. Corn and barley, wheat, and all this sort of stuff. It doesn't teach you the recipe of how to make great bread. You know, when I was in the Southwest, one of the best ceremonies that I like being a part of is when they start making, the grandma start making fry bread. The easiest way to get any native guy to do anything is to cook him up fry bread. But there's something for everybody. Everything is ceremony. Yeah. When I was up in Tacopa, there was a grandpa up there, and I'm not going to do the name-dropping thing, but there was a grandpa there, and I was watching him early in the morning after sunrise. And he's, you know, he gets his little pot of water as he, you know, walks out to the well, fills it up, he's singing. And then he lifts the pot of water up to Creator and sings. Then he walks, you know, puts it on the fire and he sings. And then he gets his tin cup and he goes and gets the tea bag and the sugar and he's singing each and honoring each thing, making his morning cup of tea. That's traditional ceremony. To live in a traditional way is simple nowadays, in a basic way of, you pray for over every meal. You show gratitude. Every sunrise, you greet the sun. Before you go to bed, you give thanks for the day. Even if it was a crappy day, you still give thanks for it. You're breathing in and out. You honor the water before you get under the shower or into the bathtub. You honor your cup of coffee or your cup of tea. Or your Maccas. I get weird looks because I'm praying over my food when I'm having Maccas with friends and their kids. And it's like, but it's McDonald's. It's not classified as food. I said, no, but animals and, you know, people have still, you know, worked hard to create that food. Animals have given up their life. Elements of nature have given up their life, their body, and their spirit so that we may live and eat what is in front of us. That is living in a ceremonial way. It's not about carrying a pipe. It's not about being a lodge pourer. It's not about being a medicine person.
Yeah,
the
I
majority of the medicine people
sorry,
I have met will admit that they are. Yeah, go on.
Now, I was going to say, I noticed last time I saw you, one of the expos, you had some of your, obviously, your own medicine on the table. Obviously, your artifacts. Can you tell everybody what you actually use? And I noticed you had, I'm trying to remember, you had a pipe, or was it a flute? I can't quite.
I've had, my bundle's my bundle, and
yeah.
It's not a for me. You know, there's different medicines that I've been gifted over the years that represent my beliefs, my connection to my ancestors and my Creator and who I am.
Yeah.
You know, the clan that I'm from. You know, I won't turn around and name each specific thing because that's disrespectful.
Well, I might be sounding a little bit ignorant, and forgive me, Ben. I'm learning here. I mean, I've never really gone into such depth with a Native Indigenous American Indigenous person before, apart from Grant Downs from Lakota. His insight was slightly different because he had a family, he had his children, and it's really interesting me to actually find out from your angle. So forgive my ignorance.
No, there's no problem with that. No, it's just for me, everything in my bundle is a living, breathing person, and I don't use them to advertise, you know. They're personal for me. It's like my family album.
Got you.
You know, I'm not going to turn around and do that because in my book, for me personally, in my views, is disrespectful to them. And they'll kick my butt. But there's also the other component is there are, you know, natives out there, you know, First Nation people that have the backing of their elders. I don't. Because I don't know which community I'm from. I've got friends that are elders in different communities. But as I'm still trying to find my family, I don't have the luxury of being supported. So I am very careful in what I say in a respectful way. There are some natives out there that can speak on behalf of their nation, and they can give more detail on specific things. I'm not one of those.
But do you have totems, animals, anything as far as the totem animals are concerned?
Yep, I believe we all do. We have our main clan, which is usually represented by an animal. And with those teachings, for me, it gives you a way to learn about who you are by observing that animal. See, in all the indigenous cultures I've been around, and it's been quite a few, the healing side of things, the ceremonies that that go around that, it's all about the story. The trauma that created the illness in the person has a story. That person has a story, and how that illness is integrated into that story, you need to understand. It's the same when you learn about that person. If you're given, you have an inside animal, you have an outside animal, because we have an inside person, we have an outside person. We have the person that we show the world. And we have a person that's who we are, that vulnerable little person that's inside our hearts. We have different animals that we'll be drawn to throughout our life. Pay attention to them, because that gives you the ability to learn more about your own story and the components of your personality. You know, there are different land structures within most nations. They're represented in many, many different ways. But, they, you know, quite often they're represented by the animals that are around the area that nation lives and the nature of those animals. Like you have wolf clan. You know, wolf, they're all about family, because they live in a pack. They work as a team. It's considered not good when a wolf works alone. So they're all about the laws of family and the way family works, and hunting, the warriorship of protecting family. So, you know, they're the warriors, the hunters, the providers, the protectors, and, you know, the police within a community. You know, that side of things. Then you've got, you know, Eagle Clan. They're, you know, they see the Eagle sees the Creator's bigger picture. In one nation, you've got, you know, the Crane Clan, and that's the chieftain clan. That's where the community leaders are chosen from. You have, you know, Bear Clan is one of the medicine clans, and there's many forms of medicine. There are those that know herb lore. There are those that, you know, see visions and seers for the future. You know, there's all these different things. I've known different nations where they've got, you know, Snake Clan. There are certain type of medicine people in certain areas, because the snake negates the poisons of life. They're the ones that deal with sickness, because they can take the sickness out of a person into their body and it doesn't make them sick. In some of the other nations that I've come across, you know, I'm being mindful here, because I've got to be respectful to some of the traditions, because there's initiate knowledge and uninitiated knowledge too.
Yeah.
You know, there's Semen Clan. There's, in other nations and other countries, you know, in Africa, you've got lions, you've got elephants, you've got coos, panthers, all this sort of stuff. Whatever is around the nation, their children will be named after, because that's going to represent that child to learn who they are, their gifts. It's like I'm 6.5 foot tall and, you know, I'm what, 110 kilos or whatever, you know, 250 pounds. I might have wanted to be a jockey my entire life.
Yeah.
It ain't going to happen. I've got to accept my clan. I'm born as a large person. So that means that I've got to fulfill what I do and use my natural abilities for my community.
Did you choose the name Standing Bear, or was it given to you?
No, it was given to me when I was back home in the States first time. And gaining names too are done in different ways in different traditions. In some nations they're given by elders, in some nations they're given by family, in some nations they're given by a place. You know?
Well, I know I'm non-indigenous, but I firmly believe that
Everybody is indigenous.
Yeah,
I'm talking about the
Native American tradition. It's just that I've always carried a name. This is ever since I was a child. The name was taught to me, Shadows. And as a child, I really did not appreciate what that name was. Here I am as a 47-year-old. I taught with Shadows.
Mm-hmm.
I once mentioned this to Skywolf, to Grant Downs. Why the name Talks with Shadows? And he just looked at me, and he just looked at me, and he said, "Where did you get that name from?" And I said, "Oh, years ago as a child, I've always carried that name." He said, "You can't be Talked with Shadows." I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, you're born white, and we don't reincarnate." I said, "Well, I was given the name Talked with Shadows." He said, "Well, you'll understand yourself in many years why you call Talked with Shadows."
Mm-hmm. Well, see, your name is your path. And it's the core. See, Standing Bear is only part of my name. But the rest of it I only say in specific ceremonies. And
yeah.
That's protocol of my work.
Yeah, well, the irony is I've got another name which I was given, and I actually traced historically right to the Lumber Wolf prairie lands, almost close to Canada, in that area where all the forests are. And the particular name actually existed. Now, that's a name, like you just said, I won't quote, except for a few people.
Yeah. But see, the thing of it is, too, that, like as I said earlier, your name is your path. That's the path you have to live up to for your community. And, you know, there, because a lot of people from England and that kind of got in their little boats and rocked over before Columbus did his little rampage and all that crap. There was, you know, a lot of history. The Norse traveled over to Turtle Island. You know, there's been a lot of interactions. And whenever indigenous communities get together, yeah, first off, there's all that chest beating stuff. Then they kind of realize, well, hey, you know, we kind of need to help each other. And culture is exchanged. You know, there are some old English family names that sound an awful lot like First Nation family names. And they go back. I've seen it when I was talking with some of the grandparents back up in Canada. And they were saying how, you know, the Norse have come across. And they've traded. You know, they've come down here to Australia and traded with the Aboriginals here. The Egyptians used to gather eucalyptus from here for the key ingredient in the embalming ceremony for the pharaohs. Before the invention of, you know, major shipping and all that, the only country that a particular type of eucalyptus that has the right oil count for the embalming process is only ever found in Australia.
Gee.
You know, when people think of indigenous or the older races, they think that they were like cave people. You know, they were barely about ape. No, man.
They were highly advanced, highly spiritual, more in connection with Mother Earth and everything that was actually occurring around them than we are now. We've lost far too much.
Yeah, but we're also being through the cycle of society. We're coming into the fifth world now. The fifth cycle of the human beings on this planet. And each cycle is thousands and thousands of years long. 2012 was not the end of things. It was the end of one cycle and the beginning of another. Because ultimately we have to learn what we have to learn for the human spirit to move forward to wherever the human spirit's going to move forward to. You know, there's old stories and prophecies all over the world. But people only listen to part of it.
Yeah.
You know, and the Creator puts different things into the mix so that we evolve. The parts of my name that I hold on to as Standing Bear is the only reason I'm still here. You know, I'll be brutally honest. There's been many times I've contemplated taking my own life, even recently, because of the hardships and everything else that I go through. I'm only human.
Yeah.
But then I sit on my step in the morning, I sing my prayers to Creator and Grandfather in the morning with the hope that this new day is going to bring a new answer or a new opportunity or a new path to being happy. and you just get off your ass and push forward that one extra step. Because Bear doesn't give up.
I've noticed that, and I absolutely admire you for it. And a lot of people will be getting a lot of inspiration from your personal story about the way that you get up and you get back up and you keep getting back up.
No, lots of people do. I'm not, you know, I'm not blowing wind at my own butt, but there are, I know so many people that struggle. The ones that fall through the cracks, the ones that are in between people. You know, we all sit there and we're in between the cracks of society. And I take my hat off to them because they get up every day. You got kids that are going to school that are being bullied relentlessly, but they still get up. And this is what I mean, you know, these people that are focusing on ascension. Well, ascension is one simple thing. It means you're dead.
Correct.
You know, that's what ascension is. And there are those that are trying to be, you know, these powerful medicine people and all this sort of stuff. I've spoken with others that are abandoning their children for their spiritual beliefs. And I'm going, well, do you think Creator is going to support a mother leaving her children to go on a vision quest and risk her life when there's young children there? And then they've turned around and gone, oh, crap, I didn't think of that.
Here's the interesting thing.
That. You're gone.
Yeah, I've cut in again. It's just your last thought, your last statement about the ascension. Here's the interesting thing. In the New Age movement, everybody's taught to open the head chakra and do the chakra cleansing. What people don't realize is when you do that Kundalini lift, when you do the intense energy, the minute you open that crown chakra with the Kundalini, you die. You ascend. And that's what the Kundalini is all about, opening your head chakra.
Yeah, and then if you look into the eyes of your children, do you want to leave them?
Correct.
Is your suffering in this world so much that you need to leave them? And that's whether you're a mother or a father.
Yeah.
Because that changes those children forever. You know, for the research that I'm doing now to write, because I'm trying to translate what I know from an indigenous understanding of how the ecosystem that a human being is into a scientific, a sociological, psychological, and psychophysiological profiling structure so that the scientists actually listen, that they value the ecosystem of the human being. And one of the studies that I was reading, if a mother is suffering, you know, pretty heavy duty anxiety during pregnancy, and especially at 20 weeks during the gestation cycle and the pregnancy, that at that point, it will completely alter the physiological structure of that baby. That baby will be born prepared to come into a hostile environment. It will be hyper-aware, which means in this society, it will be prone to dissociative, you know, personality traits, high anxiety, high stress responses, depression, because it won't relax. It actually alters how the body is formed inside the womb. When a person goes through a major trauma, it alters your body. In the indigenous ways, there are ceremonies that help bring that body back into balance. But in this modern day society, we don't do them, or we don't have the knowledge to anymore. And that altered state that we are in, from that trauma or that stress response, whatever, becomes our new normal. That actually becomes our balance. It becomes normal to us.
Yeah.
Society itself now accepts the high stress that everybody goes through just to put a roof over their head. You know, but it doesn't make it right. And I believe we have to
make it right.
Realize why we have a family. Like, I've known elders that, as I said, I've known from different cultures, not just America and Canada, but other countries as well, and they're all touting all this stuff, and their words are brilliant and powerful. But I also look at them, and they have 20 or 30 children to different women, and they've not played any part in those children's lives. There are so-called native teachers that have come over here to Australia that have done a massive amount of harm. For me, and the grandmas back home, you know, taught me this as well, is you don't look at what a person says. You look at how they work and walk their life. That is what we are. It's how we live our life every day. I've seen people that have spoken in ceremony about the sacredness of all races, and then have made racist comments to a mixed blood who's trying to, you know, that has been there at their first fire. I've seen them king hit a seven-year-old because that kid spoke out of turn. But they'll sit around a fire and over a pipe and say these words. That's not, for me, living in a good way. It's not my place to judge anybody. But for those people that want to learn traditional ceremony, you cannot learn traditions of another people. You've got to learn the traditions of your own culture, because that is the belief system that you were born with. You can journey to it through experiences with other nations, but you need to learn how to approach those nations in a respectful way. We need to learn those protocols and demand nothing. The amount of times I've had people disagree with what I've said about a particular, well, they've asked me a question about a particular ceremony, and I've explained to them that's not the way it's done. And they're going, oh, but my spirit guide, da-da-da-da-da. I don't give a crap. If you want to learn how that tradition is, get on a plane, go to that particular nation, and you'll see it, and you'll physically witness it if you're invited into it. We don't own ceremony. Creator does. We don't own our bundles. Creator does. We don't own our body. Creator does. The only thing we have the right to control is our own personal space, that couple of meters that is around our body.
Yeah.
Outside of that, we don't have a right. We don't own our children. They are gifts given to us from Creator. We're caretakers. We don't own the Earth Mother. We are a caretaker of it. We cannot heal the Earth Mother. Her medicine is beyond our comprehension. The moment that we can support trillions of life forms is when we are powerful enough to be able to heal the Earth Mother. We need to do ceremonies to heal humanity. We need to heal the people. Then the Earth Mother will stop being sick, because we will respect her.
And we forget we are actually one with the Earth Mother. We forget that we're all one organism. The universe is one organism. We're all actually part of one thing.
Yep. The Earth Mother is the wife of Creator.
Yeah.
And Skyfire was put there to protect the Earth Mother, because the Creator has a lot to watch for.
Correct.
So when we disrespect the Earth Mother, we're disrespecting the wife of Creator. And if you know of any traditional person, any good-hearted man, you disrespect his wife, you've got problems.
Correct.
You know, and that's in going into some of the older stories.
Now, on that note, Bert, we will just take another music break, and then we'll go into the final part of the show. So, we're back in about just over 4 minutes, people. It's if anyone wants to just get a drink or just stretch their legs or just... 4 minutes. I'll actually try and complete the song that we started with last week, this Enigma song. Hang on a second. Okay, you are listening to Conversations with Spirit 2 here on Mike Spirit FM. It's a little just around 9:30 here in Canberra, which means we're into about the last half an hour of the show. I'm acknowledging the number of callers that we have actually on the switchboard. All I'm asking you guys is that really, this is a discussion night. I'm electing really not to actually bring anyone in on the switchboard because it's a discussion night. I don't really want to do live calls in the middle of a discussion with Standing Bear about the Native American traditions. So this is one reason why I actually am apologizing to people for not bringing them into the show, because I just get the feeling that I will be doing live readings, and I just want to actually get on with Standing Bear, with Bear, and carry on the discussions about the indigenous people and his fascinating insight into Native American culture. Where are we, Bear? Where can we touch base from here and continue with the show from?
Well, I'm thinking, you know, giving people a basic understanding of where, if you want to get in touch with the indigenous person that you are, you know, the first place in every indigenous ceremony I've ever been invited to, participated in, the first thing you do is you put down a fire. You know, in my culture, you know, a fire is men's business. It's what a man does. Men carry the teachings of fire, women carry the teachings of water. Women are more emotional than we'll ever be. Plus, the first sign of a child being born is the woman, water comes out of the woman, the water's breaking. Women carry water. Men, the fire represents the testosterone in their blood. It teaches us how to feed our fire within. If we feed our fire too much, we become too angry. And we'll do harm. We'll risk burning everything that is sacred to us. If we don't feed our fire enough, it'll burn down the embers and we become a great person, like many of those people in suits that we see walking and catching trains going to and from work every day. They forget why they are here to live. But if there are no men around, women do put fire down. So you find a safe place, but you've also got to bring things that are sacred to you. And the gift to offer to the Earth Mother and to offer to the nature as a show of respect. You know, in my father's side, it's cornmeal. In my mother's side, it's tobacco. It's got to mean something to you, though. And you find the right place in nature where it is safe. You don't put a fire down in the middle of a pine forest on top of pine needles and then wonder why you got the forest, you know, a forest fire to deal with. It's not doing it in a smart way, and it's not doing it in a respectful way. You prepare the ground so that it is safe to light a grandfather, to put a grandfather down, to provide the means for one of the beginning points of creation, which is fire. You offer your gift to the Earth Mother because you're going to scar her by putting that fire down. You know, you show that respect to the mother and you ask permission in a good way. You offer some of your gifts to the standing people, to the tree, you know, to the wood that you're going to burn, to the grasses or the bark or whatever you're going to use to light the fire. You do not use artificial means. Here you can get away with matches and a lighter, but you don't use newspaper. You know, you go out and gather bark and grasses and stuff like that to lay down that fire, to create that veg. You're creating a dance ground for the fire spirits that you got to pray and ask to dance for you. You know, you offer some food, bits of meat, fruit, and veg, whatever, to the animals around and ask them to respect your space so that they don't come in and trample that, you know, where you are in a not-so-cool way. Over here in Australia, you've got all the critters that tend to be the 13 most deadliest things on the planet. You know, in the States, in Canada, you've got things that consider us as food. You know, and putting a fire down, you're kind of drawing attention. So you're praying to those you know, you're giving something and an offering and pray to those, you know, the spirits of those animals to protect your space, but also for them to just pass by and leave. You know, you're trying to be there in a respectful way. And having a bear stalk you in the wild is a different experience. There'll be some listeners in the States that might have had that experience, and you would know. For me, it scared the crap out of me. But it's, you know, it's all that thing about showing that respect. And then you light that fire with prayers and gratitude. And you sit and you sing, you weep, you pray, you connect to yourself and through yourself to your Creator. That fire will reflect everything you are. That fire will reflect the emotions that are buried in your heart. And it will open the path to bringing them to the surface. You're not going to make them magically disappear. A lot of people ask me, how do you get rid of trauma? You don't. You learn from it. You grow with it. Because it just changed you. You've got to learn who you are. And what it's changed in you. And what motivations you have for your community from that. How to make a difference. So that it doesn't happen again. And that fire is the first step to learning that. And then you start the story or the journey around the wheel of the elements. Because if you do fire often enough, you're going to face air. You're going to face wind. And you've got to learn how to read a fire in the wind so that it doesn't catch, you know, doesn't spread. How to keep it going so it doesn't blow out. You've got to face water. You've got to face rain and keep that fire going. If you're a firekeeper at ceremonies, and some of those ceremonies can be 4 or 7 days long, and they're outside. If that fire goes out, the ceremony finishes. So well, the group of firekeepers, you know, you could have torrential rain. You know, I've supported tending fire with other firekeepers in that, where it is pouring, it is raining. And the fire was put down in a hollow, and we had a river. We were trying to, and we kept that fire going. It took all of our prayers and effort and everything else, but we kept that fire going because it is on the firekeepers to do that. But, you know, it's a thing of humbling us in the eyes of creation. Because it's only when we're humbled do we have the courage to admit who we are, to admit that we are afraid, that we are hurt, that we are lost. We are little children lost in the shopping center of the universe. And we need help. And we need to put our hand out, not to just anybody, but to the people that connect from our heart to our heart. You never hand your power over to anyone. You share it with them sharing with you.
Yeah, because sadly, the world is fear-based, yep. And we've handed our power over to the shadow, haven't we?
We've handed our power over because we don't want the responsibility for our life. We go, well, this stuff's all too big to fix, but it ain't. People don't realize how much power we actually have. It's like I'm slowly formulating in my head how I want to build a foundation that travels the world. And the motivation for this came from those wonderful grandmothers that started the Idle No More in Canada, and that's now traveling the world, and saying enough is enough. I want to call it one day. Just to show people how much power we actually have. You look at any country, whether it's Australia, whether it's the U.S., Britain, anywhere. If 80% of the workforce took a day off, grabbed a plate of food, went down to that local park, shared that food with everybody else that turned up at that park, and took that day out to reconnect with their wives and husbands and children and grandparents and community, and remember why you get up in the morning and sit in peak hour traffic, why you work your butt off, or why you are alone, why are you too afraid to have a relationship, why, you know, or why are you fighting with your ex-wife, or they're fighting with your, you know, with you. All these sorts of things where you take that time and realize how simple life for human beings really should be and is. But if Imagine in any country with 80% of the workforce didn't turn up to work. That is how much power we have to change this world. These mega companies and governments and all that don't have the control because we give it to them. If we, enough of us, realize the sacredness of who we are and the sacredness of our families, and stop looking for excuses or justifications and handing our power and our responsibility away, and actually took pride in the beautiful side of being a human being, and just said, I'm not going to accept it. Over here, we've got the federal election coming up. Things people can take in the mind is when different programs are shut down. If an ex-offender program is shut down, you've got rehabilitated offenders wandering your streets that are going to reoffend. It's your children, your wives and husbands that they're going to reoffend against. You know, not supporting single mothers. Same deal. You got mothers of young children that the majority of them have come out of abusive relationships. Turning a blind eye when we see domestic violence and not doing something about it. We need to work together and rebuild our society from the ground up. And that, for me, the only way to learn how to do that is going back to those original, traditional, indigenous protocols. Respecting our elders. Showing gratitude for life. And the food that we eat and the home that we live in. Praying every morning. Honoring our Creator. Honoring the nature that we live amongst. Being, you know, understanding that we cannot have peace in our lives because our very existence impedes upon the peace of those around us. We kill to eat. By understanding how humble we are in creation, by we're not the reason all this is created. We're simply part of. By finding our place in our community, by learning to be part of our family again, and feeling that connection in your heart, and honoring your ancestors, by honoring those that were sent off to war, honoring our veterans, and welcoming them back home, and allowing them to learn how to be part of our family again, because they will never be the person they were before they went to war. They're changed forever. You know, a lot of in America, Canada, Australia, Europe and all that, there are a lot of veterans that are going to come back from Afghanistan, and these people have seen things and done things that people shouldn't have been asked to do, but they have. We need to honor them. You know, one of the things that brought tears to my eyes at one of the last powwows I was at up in Shiguinda, in Manitoulin Island in Canada, normally the head veterans that come in a powwow at Grand Entry were World War One, World War Two, or Vietnam or Korea. This kid carried the Eagle Staff into that circle as head veteran. He was 23 years old. And he's already done 3 tours in Afghanistan. You know, he was a kid. You know, I'm a son of a Vietnam vet. I connect to a lot of Vietnam veterans. I grew up with a lot of memories of a war I never fought in. But seeing that brought home to me the protocols that this society needs. We're going to have veterans. We've got veterans in our society now. And we're allowing our government to turn their back on them with funding, the support they need to reintegrate back into society. We need to support the women in our society. The only hope we have is our women need to take their power back to be mothers, not to become warriors, not to get angry and women's rights and all this crap. It's to be mothers. So that the children grow up in a good way, so they grow up safe and knowing that they are loved, so that they are held when they are scared. That is living in a sacred way. To where the men that are honorable men stop the men that are dishonorable from beating their wives and children. Bringing back that family. If you want to live a spiritual life, we've got to make a difference in this world. That is part of it. It's not turning a blind eye to these things. It's actively participating within your community, not to throw those people out, but to help support them so that they learn a better way.
That's right. That's it's all about saying no to this oppression and this basic, let's say, splurge on stopping families from existing and getting everybody at each other's throats and turning fellow man against fellow man. We've all got to openly stand up and say no, no more. No more wars, no more religion. We've all got to basically see each other as all what we are. We are all brothers and sisters. We are all one connected consciousness.
And we're all just simple human beings. And we got to have the courage to admit that we're afraid. I'm scared every day. I'm scared of my potential, the same as the majority of people. I'm scared of the darker side of my nature. But I don't feed it as best I can. I pray every day to feed the lighter side of my nature. Because everything is in balance. For those that have a massive capacity to love, they have the equal amount of capacity to hate. They go hand in hand. Every clan has its medicine, its positives, and its negatives. See, in reality, medicine or energy is neither positive or negative. It just is. It's how it's used. There are medicines that can be used to heal, but those exact same medicines can be used to do great harm. An easy example that everybody would know. How many people put lavender oil in an oil burner to make their home smell nice and create that relaxing atmosphere, or put it on their kids' clothing to help them go to sleep? That's a beautiful, gentle medicine. But if you ingest 2.4 mils, that's the tip of a teaspoon of lavender essential oil, you're dead. It will liquefy your liver. Every medicine has its law. Indigenous protocols and traditions are around learning that law. You know, the stories around how to gather a certain medicine plant show you the map of how to get to that medicine plant. Western world takes that medicine plant, tries to mass produce it. Doesn't work because the minerals in the ground where you farm it are different. It's only the medicine to heal that illness is only because it's growing where it is growing in that one particular spot. And it's the story of how to get there. And you earn the right to take up that plant by walking that journey. That's indigenous tradition. You know, in some of the stories of my father's people, the warriors would journey for 3 to 4 weeks to gather salt every year from the ocean. And it was a warrior test to challenge the waves. But my father's people come from the desert. And you know, they'll see the ocean once or twice in their life. Sounds funny, but, you know, the stories of that, in the spending time with the grandfathers and learning what it is to be a man and how to be in an appropriate way and how to treat your women in an appropriate way and your children in an appropriate way, that's traditional ceremony. It's not about gaining power by carrying a bundle or a pipe or pouring water in a lodge after you've spent, you know, I've known people that have done one sweat in the States and then have gone, I'm a water pourer, I can do this. And they've killed people.
Mm.
This stuff is not a game.
No, it is just not a game.
Spirits, and if spirits are not respected, they're going to kick your butt. I know of one lady that prayed from her heart. All she had to Archangel Michael from that tradition, because her husband was slowly beating her to death and her children. She prayed all of her heart to Archangel Michael to save her. And a mother's prayers have power in that place. But she didn't know and understand the tradition. Well, she actually did, but she didn't believe it. Now, in that protocol and that tradition of those of that way, Archangel Michael can never be in heaven because he is a warrior. He takes life. And the price tag for that is whenever he chooses to take life, he requires the life of the firstborn child. That husband died in a car accident. 4 days later, her eldest child died. This is what I mean. Ceremony is not a game.
No, it's not.
We get away with it all the time because we're not praying from our heart. But when something happens that forces us into our heart, and we actually do pray from our heart, your prayers are going to be answered. And if you're praying to a spirit, that spirit is not going to do it for free. That spirit will always have something in return.
Has to be a payment, there has to be a sacrifice, there has to be a balance of energy. If you want something and you ask one of these spirits for personal help or personal growth, something has to be taken away to get that payment.
Yep, and it can be what you've offered for that ceremony, but different spirits offer ask for different things. And the higher up the food chain you go, the higher the price.
Correct.
Another simple thing, like back home, if you don't pray over elk or deer meat, the price of deer giving of its life and its body for us to eat is it needs to be honored with respect and song. If a prayer song is not sung over deer meat or elk meat, then everybody that eats it will get sick. Mm. Everything asks. Sometimes what we offer is simple. Sometimes what is asked of us is not so simple. And what I mean, it's not about scaring people or really, you know.
No, you're speaking the truth.
There are some people that are going, no, I don't agree with this. But learn your tradition.
Yeah.
This stuff's not a game. If you're going to use a certain medicine, learn it.
You're going to know the medicine inside and out, yeah. These spirits do, and they do take payment. I mean, I have seen so many people who are dealing with that particular tradition there, and they have no idea what they're dealing with, and their lives fall apart, and their health declines, and they can't see it. Everybody else can see it, but they can't see it.
Yep. And I've also seen where people that have a genuine connection to spirit that have used it for their own gain. And because so many people start listening to them, the only way to save those people is that spirit will take that person's mind. They will go crazy.
Correct.
Because then people are going to go, that person's crazy. I'm not listening to them anymore. And then they'll take their power back.
Correct.
None of this stuff is about what you get out of it. It's what you give to your community.
It's all about the giving. That is dead right. It's all about the giving. It's not personal gain. This is where so many people have got it wrong. It's all about the giving. Okay, we have to survive in this industry, but we have to remember and respect it's all about the giving. It's not a personal thing that you do it for.
And it's also the same thing being that if you go to somebody for help, you respect them by offering something in return.
Correct.
And if you offer, back home, if you want to approach an elder, you bring a gift of food. You put some money in an envelope because a lot of them don't, they live in poverty. You put not $20, you put a decent amount of what you can in an envelope and you make a gift. Something that you've made yourself. And when I buy, I'll bring a week's worth of groceries. I'll get $200 worth of groceries and meat and stuff like that because they live in poverty. Wow. And tobacco.
Now, we're down to about the last 5 minutes here, Bear. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to let everybody know there's going to be a part two of our discussion. I'm going to invite you on again so we can take off where we left off because the response in the chat room has been phenomenal. So I would like very much in a couple of weeks for you to maybe come back on the show.
Yeah, not a problem. Not a problem.
Because we are running out of time because I'm going to play a song right at the end, which is about 4 minutes. We've got about a minute left. So I just want to really thank you, Standing Bear, for coming on.
I just want to say, those that want to get hold of me, I'm on your Facebook page or the email address. And just give out the email, if that's fine.
I shall do that. Absolutely awesome. So just as a tradition on Conversations with Spirit, I would like to thank my guest, Standing Bear, for coming on this evening. Hang on a second, let me get the button to work. You should get a round of applause. And anybody who, just in case you didn't hear that, anybody who wants to actually get in contact with Standing Bear, I've got the actual link to Standing Bear's page. So if you guys want to PM me, that's, let me have a look, there's Simone, there's Patty, there's Greg, who else is there in there? Just send me a PM, and then I will send a friendship request for you to Standing Bear.
Yep, that's the best way to do it, eh?
Absolutely awesome. Thank you once again for coming on, Bear. And we should just go out with a final piece of music until same time, same place next week. Next week I've got Daniel Lee on, who I believe is a personal friend of yours as well. You know Danielle, don't you, Standing Bear?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Danielle's on next week.
Awesome.
So until next week, everybody, thank you so much for listening to the show. What a relief we actually got the 2 hours this time round.
Yeah,
we got there.
Thanks for tuning in to Matthew James Medium. You can contact Matthew anytime by logging on to www.matthewjamesmedium.com. Until next week, goodbye.